Adjunct Leeson sought me out first. He was a little on the shorter side, balding and opinionated. "This planet sucks so hard," he told me. "You're the luckiest bastard I know of on Dark World." That's what people had begun calling it, Dark World. Part of the reason for the name was the dim sun, but on top of that, the planet itself looked dark all the time. It appeared to be in a perpetual twilight. The purpley night side was facing us right now, and I had to admit it looked pretty damn dark down there. I said, "How do you figure I'm lucky? Did you hear about our drop? Just that you punched through the hull and splashed down in the middle of some kind of molten metal." Leeson made a hissing sound, closing his eyes and remembering. "That's right. Only it was more like landing in lava. Just imagine you're cruising down on the drop, homing your capsule in on Winslade, our finest. Yeah. And so, boom! We cracked right through the skin of this giant titanium outhouse. Winslade planned that, see? He didn't set our retros to fire as we approached the skin of the factory structure. He figured he'd be smart and grab some glory. So he set our drop pods not to fire the retros until they made actual contact." "Ouch," I said. I hadn't known the disaster was so directly attributable to Winslade. "At that point," Leeson continued, "we were going too damn fast, so wham, we punched right through the roof and down into a pool of molten metal. Damn straight. But here comes the bad part. Sure, we knew at that point we were dead. It was hopeless. But the friggin' drop pods didn't get it. They tried to keep us alive. They're on automatic, you know." "Oh," I said, visualizing the scene. The drop pods were built to resist heat. They could take a lot of it, being built with outer layers that burned off as they fell through the atmosphere of a target world. "Yeah," Leeson said, eyeing me. "I could see you're getting the picture. We were trapped in those damned coffins with the outer insulation slowly burning off. We were broiled, McGill. Cooked like one of those barbecued meats you bury in a pit of hot coals. Only we were burned alive." "More like lobster, then." He squinted at me after this comment. "You think it's all funny? Just a big joke?" No. In truth, the thought of it almost gave me a shiver. I've died a lot of ways, some worse than others, but I'd never been cooked, not to the best of my knowledge anyway. "I'm sorry to hear about that mess," I told him, seriously. "It's okay," Leeson said, getting over his anger quickly. "Wasn't your fault." He studied my boots for a moment. "You haven't heard anything, have you?" "About what?" He tossed a hateful glance at Winslade's back. "About command changes." I followed his look, and I thought about the situation. Finally, I caught on. I said, "are you wondering if my rank has been reinstated?" "Yeah, damn it, what about it? I heard Graves came through here just a half hour ago." It was nice to have a man who was hoping I'd get my rank back. In his own way, Leeson was paying me a big compliment. "The topic didn't come up," I said, recalling that Graves had been annoyed with me. I left that part out. Okay, but listen, don't screw up any more in this mission, you got that? We need you running this unit again." Leeson stalked off, and I thought his words over. I wasn't sure I could manage it. I was already entertaining ideas of doing things that were unsanctioned at best. Shrugging, I went to find some food. The reinforcements had brought good rations and camping equipment down with them, at least. I figured I'd just play everything by ear. After all, that's pretty much what I always did. Chapter 21. After I'd eaten and found a place to anchor my sleeping bag, I settled in for the night. Sleeping in Null G is hard for some people, I hear, but not for me. I kinda liked it. The sensation was like that of floating on a raft. Recruits often felt out of control and jumpy, but I just drifted and snored. Command chat woke me up a few hours later. "Cohort, we've got incoming," Graves said. For safety reasons, we were sleeping with our helmets on. That wasn't terribly comfortable, but if the station suddenly lost pressure, all we had to do was slam down our visors and we'd be able to keep on breathing. Reflexively, I did just that. Graves's voice continued speaking in my ears as I groaned and stretched.
The Vulbites are taking another shot at us, he said. This time they're coming up the umbilical.
Like most large permanent space structures, the space dock had a thick, hollow cable anchoring it above a single location. The space dock was in orbit, but it moved at the same speed the planet rotated. That meant the structure was always above one fixed spot on the world below.
Can't we just destroy the umbilical?
I heard a voice ask on command chat. It was Centurion Manfred. He wasn't a man who could keep quiet long if he had a question. If I hadn't lost my rank, I would have asked the same thing.
No, Graves said. That would impair the operation of this facility. Most of this factory's raw materials come up from the planet it's anchored to. If you destroy that...
He didn't need to tell us anything more. Many of us had served on Tech World when a heavily populated orbital city had been disconnected from its anchoring planet. The results had been memorable and disastrous.
I'm patching in Tribune Turov, Graves said. She'll lay out the overall battle plan. If any of you feel like speaking up, don't bother. I've put you all on mute.
The channel scratched and beeped for a few seconds before Turov came on the line.
We're setting up a defensive perimeter in the docking area, she said. Cohorts 4, 6, and 7 are to advance and encircle the loading bays. The rest of you maintain your positions for now. Turov out.
As we were the third unit in the cohort, I felt some relief. We were to maintain our post. Harris signaled me and I looked at him.
That was unusual, he said. Maybe this attack is a bad one.
I was thinking the same thing. I said. That short, to-the-point set of commands from Turov surprises me. She usually likes to give long, drawn-out, moralizing speeches that totally waste... Our conversation was interrupted as the channel crackled back into life again.
I'm reopening the Legion-wide command channel, Turov said. But I've removed the 3 cohorts I've activated so as not to distract them.
Damn, I should have known.
Harris groaned aloud.
I've overheard several conversations, Turov continued, indicating wrong-headed thinking among the rank and file. This enemy is not in the right.
Harris and I looked at each other and shrugged. We certainly hadn't felt any special sympathy for these overgrown centipedes.
The Vulbites are mere servants to the mysterious Rigelians. They're squatters here, entitled to nothing. In fact, this territory was ceded to Earth 6 years ago at the end of the Cephalopod War.
Damn, had it really been 6 years already? Time sure flew by when you kept fighting and dying on different planets.
These Rigelians are cowards, Turov said,
and I sensed she was winding up for a full-blown speech.
Have any of you wondered why we haven't seen them yet? They don't like to fight their own wars. Their troops are never volunteers. They're mercenaries at best, slaves at worst.
If that's not the pot calling the kettle black, I said. Harris gave me a funny look, but then he got it.
You mean because we're mercenaries, right? Or because these blood worlders are,
Right, I said. We got both. I tuned back into Turov's speech because she wasn't done yet. Not by a long shot.
Absolutely no respect for their troops, not even their officers. Even those among them who command their servant troops are considered low caste. The Rigelians sneer at military people of every kind, including us.
That was different, I had to admit. Back on Earth, people generally liked the Legions. They even had their favorites. Some officers had trading cards, online followings, and public appearances that went beyond just recruitment drives.
I wonder what they look like, I said aloud, but of course she couldn't hear me. I was on mute.
Harris waved to me and pointed to his tapper. I looked at my own and I saw a blinking indicator. I touched it, and a visual data stream sprang to life. There, on the side of my forearm, I saw Galena walking on a stage. Behind her was a large image of a strange-looking alien.
"This is a Rigelian, we think," she said. "We haven't captured an individual of the Overseer species yet, but by using deep probes, the nature of which will remain secret, Hegemony has managed to secure snippets of video like this one."
The Rigelian wasn't entirely ugly, but it wasn't pretty either. If I had to put a label on it, I'd say it looked like an oversized bear cub. But this bear cub stood upright, and it didn't have much fur, just curly tufts here and there. Was it cute? Not to me. A girl might think so, but I thought it was kind of nasty looking, like a troll in a kid's story that squats under a bridge. Wearing no clothing other than a loop of silver chain, the plucked bear cub marched along a catwalk above a large mass of vulbites. Now and then, it gestured and gave commands. Often, when it did so, the bear thing pointed down into the crowd. A flying drone would then dart into the mass of vulbites, locate the individual which the bear cub had indicated, and snip off a leg. That was alarming, and it clearly brought pain to the vulbite. Since they had about 100 churning legs each, they could still function all right. It was unfortunate for them that they had plenty of limbs to sacrifice.
"What a vicious teddy bear," Harris said.
"That's a slave driver if I ever saw one," Leeson added. I glanced at each of them, not sure what to think yet. Turov was back on screen again, walking around in boots in front of her video clip. She froze the shot and slapped at the bear's ears.
"We believe these are sensitive organs," she said.
"No shit," Harris said, snorting.
"We estimate these creatures are a little over a meter tall," Turov continued. "But they possess greater muscle density than humans. These monstrous beings are powerful and cruel to their subordinates."
She turned to face the camera drone fully, and we all watched. I had to admit seeing her like this was generating a certain interest I'd forgotten about since that day in her office.
"If you ever have the displeasure of meeting up with a Rigelian," she told us, "I don't want you to take its life immediately, despite its disgusting nature. We could learn a great deal from a captive."
The camera lens zoomed in on her face, and she filled my tapper. The girl still had it. I was suddenly real sorry I hadn't managed to finish up the last time I'd been with her. I recalled how she'd led me on and teased me after that. I felt a certain determination overcome me to follow through with my original intentions, sooner or later. Maybe my expression revealed something of my thoughts, because when I looked up, both Harris and Leeson were staring at me and grinning. "What?" I asked.
"I bet you can't even stand up straight right now, can you, McGill?"
Leeson laughed.
"You dirty dog,"
Harris declared in mock disgust. He shook his head.
"I keep hearing rumors about you two, but I'm a hard man to convince. Then you go and confirm it all."
"How do I confirm anything?" I demanded. The two adjuncts looked at each other in amusement.
"It's in your eyes, McGill," Harris told me. "And your pants."
Leeson nodded sagely.
"That's right. It's true love. I've seen it before, and I'm sure I'll see it again. You two are soulmates, a match made in hell."
They both laughed. Trying not to show how annoyed I was, I looked back down at my tapper.
True love. As if.
Sure, Galena was cute, and I'd always enjoyed hooking up with her whenever the moment presented itself. But the idea we had a tight relationship, that we could ever be anything but friends, that was absurd. Turov kept going, talking, and strutting around. She was trying to make the Vulbites and the Rigelians out as monsters. I'd seen and heard it all before. True or not, it was a standard-issue propaganda technique. Long before Galena stopped talking, I'd stopped listening. I was still watching her, however. She was pretty. An alert signal went off, jolting me out of my reverie. I tuned back in, surprised. Galena stopped yapping suddenly.
The enemy has reached the hull, she said. Our loading bay ambush.
She trailed off as someone off stage began speaking to her. She listened for a moment, and after a few sentences, she showed her fine white teeth in a snarl.
Shit,
she said, and stalked away from the camera. The vid stream cut off. Harris, Leeson, and I exchanged confused glances. Then we felt, rather than heard, something. The hull was shivering. Impacts? I asked aloud.
Sure as hell feels like it, Leeson said.
Winslade buzzed into our ears a few moments later.
I've gotten word from Graves, he said. The Volbites apparently didn't read the script Turov wrote for them. They stopped the elevator short of entering the loading bays, and they've moved in force out onto the exterior hull instead.
What are those explosions we're feeling, sir? I asked.
Winslade slid his eyes to regard me.
They appear to be using charges to blow open hatches. They're invading the decks about a kilometer from here right now.
Grunting, we got to our feet and ordered our platoons to assemble. Over recent hours, our ranks had swollen due to revivals and reinforcements. The unit was nearly full strength.
We should have blown that umbilical, Leeson declared.
Don't I know it, Harris agreed.
I didn't chime in. It was my belief that the brass had been right on that call. If we'd destroyed the umbilical, this massive orbital factory would have been rendered useless. In that case, what would have been the point of invading Dark World at all?
Chapter 22.
The enemy wasn't fooling around this time. Volbites poured out onto the station's hull, crawling in a black-brown mass. They didn't bother to come in stealthed this time. They wore pressure suits, but they seemed to be much more form-fitting than ours were. They were even the same color as the typical Volbite carapace, which gave the illusion we were fighting creatures that could tolerate hard vacuum.
Their suits are better than ours, Harris complained. Better tech. It's like some kind of translucent film that covers their whole body. What I don't get is how they can take the radiation.
Space is a deadly place. Most of the universe is space, and it's full of things that will kill the toughest man in under a minute. Vacuum, the utter lack of an atmosphere, was only one such item on a long list. Fantastic heat and cold were equally as deadly. Orbiting Dark World and her pathetically dim sun, one might think it never got hot. But without any air to protect us, it still hit plus or minus 100 degrees Celsius on the exposed skin of the space factory during any given planetary spin. Then there was radiation. Many planets had magnetic fields that generated Van Allen belts of particle radiation. Your cells were bombarded with it whenever you were in certain areas of space, and Dark World had that charming feature as well. Our own suits were pretty thick, and that was partly an effort to keep harmful gamma rays from penetrating.
Either their suits are very advanced, I said, meaning they stop radiation, or Volbites can take a dose of rads better than humans can.
They are bugs, Harris agreed. Some bugs can take 100 times what we can.
But they can't take the weight of a man's shoe. Don't worry, we got this.
We were tense, squatting in our chamber and waiting for the word to move up and meet the enemy. That word hadn't come yet, but we suspected it was only a matter of time. At last, Graves came online and spoke to us.
McGill, he said, take your unit out onto the hull. Set up some automated turrets and hunker down. Let them come to you. Engage only when they're right on top of you. We're hoping they won't use their ground-based beamers for fear of killing their own troops.
Excuse me, Primus, Winslade said in an acid voice. I believe I'm in charge of Third Unit today.
Oh, right. They revived you, didn't they, Centurion? Okay, I'm giving you the same orders. Move out immediately.
Harris and Leeson grinned at me. They knew Graves hated Winslade. Everybody did.
McGill's platoon will move to the hatch first and open it, Winslade ordered. Then they will exit first. The rest of you hold back until we see if any of his recruits survive.
Cooper was back from the revival machines, and he moved up next to me. I glanced at him, and I saw the fear and tension in his face. Sure, the kid was a jackass, but he had every right to be afraid. Cooper was watching me closely, intently. I got the feeling he wanted to know how I'd survived the last go-round with these aliens. Smart boy. Death could be a great motivator. The bay doors yawned wide. We saw the stars and the dull, glimmering crescent of dark world outside. Normally I'd send a man like Cooper up to scout, but I didn't have the heart. Instead, I crawled out on my belly and ordered Keevy to send out buzzers. At first, it looked like we were alone. The hull was encrusted with equipment, sensors, pipes, and even a few bodies from our last battle out here. The buzzers lifted high, and I watched the relayed scene. The Vulbites were swarming in great numbers. They were moving steadily forward, like ants bubbling out of an anthill in every direction. They didn't bother to use stealth cloaks this time. They seemed well aware we might counterattack at any moment. They carried beamers with their largest forward limbs. A dozen clawed legs clutched their rifles, pointing their weapons at every strut, tower, and instrument. "Well, McGill?" Winslade called me on our local command chat, his voice seethed with impatience. "Are you moving your platoon out there or not?" "I'm scouting, sir," I said. "Right now I'm the only man who's going to fry if those batteries down there on the surface decided to nail this region again."
"Editing your orders already. You're not wasting any time today."
"Excuse me, sir. Do you wish to micromanage or relieve me of my command?" Winslade considered it.
"No. But do you plan to do more than squat up there?"
"Of course, sir. I'm carrying out Graves's orders one step further, that's all. I'm watching the enemy approach. I'm letting them get just a little closer before I expose my platoon." Winslade growled, and I imagined he'd crossed his skinny arms by now. He didn't quite have the confidence with tactics to overrule me. That was for the best. "Okay now, they're about 200 meters out. I need all my weaponeers and demolitions people to set up turrets." A half dozen troops crawled out to join me. They pulled turrets from their rucks and set them up on raised, flat surfaces. My own platoon only had 2 such specialists, and I was glad to see Leeson had lent me his troops for this purpose without being asked. "All right," I said. "We're at 100 meters. Deploy and scatter. Stay low. Don't position yourselves between an auto turret and the enemy line. The turret will probably shoot right through you." The weaponeers hastily retreated into the hole, and my light troops slid up onto the roof and moved into position. Behind them, a dozen armored heavies gathered. Everyone was hugging up against any cover they could find. We weren't shielding ourselves from the advancing enemy line, but rather trying to put the biggest chunk of metal we could between our bodies and the crescent of Dark World. As beams were line-of-sight weapons, an air vent or radar dish might save a life at this point. The battle began early, before we were set up for it. Maybe the enemy had spotted us. The crews from the beamers on the surface, or drones, or the Vulbites themselves could have done it. No matter how they detected our ambush, they rushed to meet us at the last minute. A horde of Vulbites came in close, their strange guns flashing with a violent, ghostly fire from the muzzles. Being a space battle, it sounded different. There was no air to transmit vibrations to our ears except inside our helmets. At the same time, we were in radio contact with one another. As a result, you heard a lot of shouting, cursing, and labored breathing. This was layered with a hiss of air conditioning inside your own suit. The enemy made no sound as they rushed close and engaged. They seemed as eager to close as we were. Maybe their weapons weren't as effective as ours were at range. They did seem more like flamethrowers, or maybe radiation throwers, than regular rifles. Whatever their reasoning, the enemy got close to us and mixed it up immediately. Flapping my snap rifle to full auto, I hammered down the first one I came into contact with. The snap rifle jerked rhythmically in my gauntlets, but I couldn't hear the splattering rounds. The Vulbite went into a spin, losing touch with the hull and going over my head. He was flipping and twisting up his long body like a pretzel. Then he went limp and drifted above us. More and more troops poured out onto the hull on both sides. The beam batteries on the planet didn't fire. Maybe they knew they couldn't without endangering their own soldiers. We fought for about 7 long minutes out there. Now, to some people, that might not seem like a long time. Often, battles could go on for days. But this was a single, continuous assault. When the Volbites finally broke, they'd lost about 100. We'd lost about half that many. The sky above us was full of drifting bodies, both human and alien. Whenever one showed any signs of life, automated turrets pumped rounds into the convulsing body until it again lay still.
"Pull back, McGill," Winslade said.
"Why, sir?" I asked. "We're doing pretty good out here."
"Yes, you are, but most of the other strongholds have been defeated. The enemy is pocketing your position. It's hopeless."
For once, I thought Winslade was doing his job right. He had his eye on the big picture. Wriggling backwards, I slid down into the hatch, and we sealed it tight again. "We lost?" I asked. "They captured the surface of the factory hull?"
"Yes," Winslade said, looking us over.
"But you did exceptionally well, troops. You held the line longer than most. Take a break. This has only just begun."
Chapter 23 The Volbites now controlled the exterior hull of the orbital complex. It was like having enemy soldiers crawling all over your roof. Not a comfortable situation. It was our first serious defeat on Dark World. We'd fought hard, but we'd been driven back. Even with a full-strength legion, we'd been forced to retreat inside the hull and stay there.
"Well, if this isn't just the shits," Leeson said. "Don't call me a prophet, but I'm looking at the meat grinder to end all meat grinders."
"How do you mean, adjunct?" I asked.
"I've been with Varys for about 20 years longer than you have, McGill," he said. "So I remember the old campaigns. First off, these people are bugs. That means they don't give up until they're dead, until all of them are dead. You ever seen a bee or an ant get scared and run from a battle?"
"No," I admitted.
"There you have it. Same thing with these Volbite friggers, but it's worse than that. Usually, when you're going to win a battle, you start off winning and you keep winning. It rarely seesaws back and forth."
"We're on the seesaw?"
"I'd say we're the fat kid on this seesaw. We're on the downside now, and we're going to stay down. The basic fact is, the enemy has too many troops. Even with the revival machines, we can't hold out forever."
"So," I said, taking him seriously, "we're looking at dying a lot?"
"Doesn't have to be that way," Harris interjected.
He walked over and joined our conversation, having clearly listened in.
"Oh, I want to hear this," Leeson said. "This is going to be good."
Harris frowned at him briefly.
"The answer is simple. We call for serious reinforcements, right now, up front, before they push us off this station entirely."
"Another legion?" Leeson said. "You're dreaming."
"Why not? It's not like we'd have to fly another ship out here. We've got a gateway set up. Just march them through."
"How many?"
Leeson asked, crossing his short, thick arms.
"One, two, 6 legions, hell, I don't know, whatever it takes."
Leeson shook his head.
"It'll never happen. Turov would rather wipe."
I frowned at him. "Why's that?" He gave me a dirty laugh.
"You should know. You know we're better than any of us."
Thinking about it for a second, I nodded.
"Right. It would look bad. She'd be seen as weak, as calling for help.
But doesn't it make sense to do that now before things become desperate?"
"Damn straight,"
Harris shouted. Leeson lifted a finger and waggled it at us, shaking his head.
"You're not thinking like our lovely Tribune. She wants her rank back. That's all she's thinking about right now. Calling for help on the second day, she'd have the stink of a loser. She'll convince herself Varys can do this alone."
I got it suddenly. It was as if the future were laid out before me in a series of stepping stones.
"Right," I said.
"She'll wait too long. She won't call for help until we're driven all the way back to Nostrum."
"Bingo,"
Leeson said, pointing his waggling finger at me.
"So now, McGill, tell me how this all ends up."
"Meat grinder," I said. "Reinforcements, maybe from each side, upping the ante until it's a grand mess. Leeson said, frowning. Thinking the bugs and their side through. This has got to be even worse than I thought. Those vicious bear cub things don't seem to be as dumb as our brass. They've probably called up Rigel for help. They'll come in force.
But they probably will have to send a ship, or lots of ships, Harris said.
He had that glassy look in his eyes now. We all had it. After a starman has been out on a dozen campaigns, he gains a certain skill and tactics above his rank. His experiences teach him, one savage beating at a time, how the universe really works.
McGill, Harris said, turning to me, you've got to give it a shot.
Me? Harris is right, Leeson said. Turov doesn't give a shit about any of us, but for some reason she's sweet on you.
Heaving a sigh, I threw up my hands. I'll do what I can, I said. They both clapped me on the back, but about then Winslade came over to see what we were talking about.
McGill, Harris, Leeson, he said. Is it somebody's birthday?
Unfortunately, no, sir, I said. I felt more than saw Leeson and Harris fade into the background. I'd experienced this sort of thing before. People often egged me on to do something they didn't have the brass pair to attempt. Usually these same cheerleaders ran off when the process began. My eyes fixed upon Winslade. He already looked suspicious. He probably thought we were working up a case to mutiny against him. It wouldn't have been the first time. Sir, I said, I'd like to say you've handled this pretty well so far.
Well,
he said, taken by surprise.
Thank you, McGill.
We've both been done wrong on this deal, I said. This was my unit and your cohort. We've been busted down a rank, but that doesn't mean we have to turn on each other.
Yellow suspicion lit up his rodent-like eyes again.
Turn on one another? Was that proposed only moments ago by your peers?
I shook my head.
No, sir. We'd rather turn our sights higher. Toward the one who put us in this unhappy circumstance.
You mean Tribune?
My big hand came up toward his face in a shushing motion. He took an involuntary step back, as I was twice his size and we hadn't had the most cordial relationship in the past. When I lowered my hand, however, he regained his composure quickly.
Let's not name any targets, I said. A smile flickered, but quickly vanished. Winslade was happy, but he didn't want to let on. That was just fine.
Do you have, he began, lowering his voice, a suggestion as to how we might accomplish such a lofty objective?
I could tell his mind had leapt forward right to where he wanted the conversation to go, and to where I wanted him to be. He thought I was offering to help him bring down Turov to get our ranks back. Hell, it might come down to that. Who knew? But, of course, that wasn't my immediate goal. My plans were focused upon avoiding the meat grinder scenario that Leeson had so lovingly laid out.
I need an excuse, I said.
For what? He asked, scowling a little.
You rarely need an excuse for anything you do.
To see her.
His eyes lit up again.
Ah, of course. Here, take this.
He handed me something. It was small, like the size of a house fly.
What's this? I asked.
A very discreet buzzer, he said. I'll send you an app for your tapper to control it. Be careful. It only has enough battery power to operate for a few hours. You must deploy it to get the video we require.
What video exactly? He looked disgusted, and he put his fists on his hips.
Are you not following the conversation? He demanded. You must capture the harassment while it's ongoing. Is that somehow unclear?
The light finally went on in my fridge.
Oh, yeah, I've got it. Okay, will do. I closed my hand on the tiny device, and Winslade made a hissing sound, sucking air through his teeth.
"Careful, you ape," he said. "That item is very delicate. Put it into this tube before deployment."
He gave me a tube, and I put it next to the buzzer. Both fit in my palm. Under its own power, the spy drone crawled into the tube and vanished. Suddenly, I understood something.
"Hey, all that crap about you hacking Central's office security? That was hogwash, wasn't it? You used one of these toys."
Winslade gave me a tiny shrug and pursed his lips.
"When caught, it's best to confess to the wrong crime."
"I'll remember that," I laughed. "Now, I only need one more thing."
"Yes, yes,"
he asked quickly. "An excuse to go up to Gold Deck on Nostrum." Winslade licked his lips in thought. Just watching him do it made me grimace. It wasn't a manly mannerism, but I knew better than to tell him so.
"I've got it,"
he said after a minute or two. He pulled out a data chip and pinched it until it crackled.
"You broke it?"
I asked.
"Not that you know of. Take this report to her. Tell her it's from the front, and it's highly confidential."
I said, looking at the tiny chip. "But it's broken." Winslade rolled his eyes.
"It's broken," he said between clenched teeth, "because there's no data on it. The entire thing is a ruse. I swear, McGill, for a man who's managed so many..."
"Right, I get it. I'm on my way, sir." I walked away toward the passages that led deeper into the orbital complex, and I left him behind, shaking his head. The data chip, the cover story, and Winslade's approval got me all the way down to the gateway posts. The chamber was in the center of the factory complex. Down here it was hot, and the air was wet. Unfortunately, as there were a lot of blood worlders around, that meant it didn't smell too good. It took some talking, but I managed to get past the guards and the suspicious non-coms running the gateposts. When the flow of fresh troops paused for a few seconds, I got the nod. I stepped in between the posts. A shimmering, pink-white haze hung in the air there, and I felt an odd shiver in my molecules as I passed through. In that moment, I ceased to exist. Chapter 24. Effectively, the gateway deleted my existence from the orbital complex and added it to the lower decks of Nostrum an instant later. It was a weird feeling, but one I'd experienced before. I'd never liked it. The whole thing was kind of creepy, if you ask me. I knew enough to understand I wasn't being transported from one place to another, not in reality. Instead, I'd been disintegrated and then rebuilt again, molecule by molecule, in a remote location. My usual approach to disturbing technology like this was to think fixedly about something else. If you thought about what was really happening to you, well, it would be damned hard to march into it. In that way, I likened it to cliff diving. You just had to convince yourself everything was going to be fine, then you jumped out into space. "Adjunct," the guards asked me on the far side, "what's this all about?" They were Varus veterans, and I thought I knew one of them. I showed him my tapper. Winslade's order was clearly printed there. The non-com frowned. "Gold Deck? Wasn't Winslade busted down to Centurion recently?" I shrugged. "Sometimes ranks change quick around here," I said. "How long have you been a vet?" He looked at me suddenly, his eyes guarded.
3 years. Since Blood World."
"Right, well, things change quick in Varus." The two non-coms exchanged glances. They cleared their throats.
"You're good to go, sir. Gold Deck can be reached down this..."
"I know the way." I left them scratching their heads. I didn't look back, and I didn't hurry. Part of the key to barging into places was maintaining the illusion that you were completely calm and belonged there. Just doing that kept most questioners at bay. Arriving at Turov's office, I almost made it to the door. Almost.
"McGill,"
A voice boomed. It was a familiar voice. My hopes sank as I turned to face Primus Graves. He looked me up and down appraisingly. He must not have liked what he saw because his expression was highly dubious.
McGill, what the hell are you doing on Gold Deck?
How'd you find me, sir? I asked, faking a smile.
I had a watch put on your whereabouts. Imagine my shock when you traveled from the factory complex to this ship in an instant's time, without authorization.
Oh, I have authorization, sir.
Like hell you do. I'm the only one on Gold Deck you could possibly be here legitimately to see, and I don't remember you making an appointment. Are you bucking to be busted down to Veteran next?
Telling Grave that Winslade had sent me wasn't going to buy any happiness. Not with this man. He knew Winslade just as well as he knew me. No, Graves had to be given a solid reason before he'd let me keep on walking. At this point, I feel something needs explaining. If I have one gift that never seems to fail to impress, it must be that of improvisation. Under normal circumstances, my mind seems to move like a turtle in a snowstorm, but when the pressure is on, it can occasionally flip into high gear. It's an inborn thing, or so my mama says. Without skipping a beat, I fished the tiny tube Winslade had given me out of my breast pocket. Tipping it gently, I tapped at the far end until the fly-sized spy drone crawled out into my palm.
What the hell is that?
Graves asked.
This is how he did it,
I said. How who did what?
I lowered my voice and leaned closer to Graves. Frowning, he leaned back immediately. Graves liked his personal space. He especially didn't enjoy close proximity with any man.
Sir, I said quietly, do you remember when Winslade produced that video of Turov in a compromising moment? How could I forget? You starred in it, and you shamed the whole damned cohort that day.
I could argue that point, but that's not why I'm here. I nudged the spy drone, and it crawled about an inch closer to Graves.
This is how he did it.
Graves stared at the drone for a second, and his face contorted as he caught on.
You mean he lied about hacking into Central Security System?
I smiled tightly.
What do you think is more likely, sir?
I asked. That Winslade suddenly grew some mad hacking skills, or this?
Right, he said, staring at the drone. So, you're going to show this to Turov?
Without answering, I gently stuffed the drone back into its tube and put it away. Do I have your permission to continue, sir? I asked. Graves looked indecisive.
All right, but keep me out of this cloak and dagger bullshit, all right?
Will do. Thank you, sir.
He turned away in disgust, like I was a suspected plague carrier, and hustled away. There was only one more barrier between me and Turov's office. The pretty boy in her outer office had his feet on his desk and his eyes on his tapper. He swept up to stand when I walked in, but immediately relaxed again when he recognized me.
Oh, it's you. What do you want, McGill?
To see Turov, of course. He flicked his hand at me. His eyes were already back on his tapper.
Are you blind? It's 4 p.m. She left early today. If she hadn't, there would have been a crowd to fight past.
He was right, of course. I hadn't thought of that.
Thanks, I said. I'll come back tomorrow.
His lips twisted sourly. I got the feeling he didn't like a little friendly competition. Stepping back out, I walked down towards the private quarters sector of Gold Deck. Another veteran stepped forward suddenly.
Where are you going, sir? He asked.
Damn, I said. There are more guards up here than there are troops in my unit on the front line.
There'll be one more of them when you turn around and head back to the line, sir.
This vet was stern. I checked out his name. Veteran Alders.
You know what, Alders? I asked him. You should have joined Hegemony.
His face reddened.
For any Legion Varus man, those were fighting words. In fact, I continued, you remind me of a hog I once knew in Newark Sector. He had a petty job which he made out to be a big deal, too. The wannabe hog drew his nightstick, which was a shock rod in reality. He switched it on.
Listen, McGill. Yeah, I know who you are. You're trouble, and I'm not supposed to allow...
Veteran Alders had made a critical error. He was waving that shock rod right between the two of us, in what he imagined was a threatening manner. What I saw was a man who had a very loose grip on a dangerous weapon. To inform him of a possible safety violation, I reached up to steady his hand. Alders jerked it back, away from me, and just as suddenly as I'd reached for his wrist, I let it go. The shock rod jerked up and tapped him, square in the mouth. There was a loud cracking sound like when some rookie gets himself snapped hard in the ass by a towel. Whatever sanctimonious speech the vet had been about to give me ended right there. Gagging and toppling back, he hit a steel wall and slid down onto his butt. He landed hard. His face was red and full of pain.
Ooh, I said. That looked bad. Let me help you up.
Alders roared incoherent sounds like a wounded pig as he swatted an arm at me. His words had come out quite garbled due to his swelling lips and tongue.
What's going on out here?
A female voice demanded. I turned around. Turov had opened her private door. She was wearing a silk, hip-length, white robe. Some might have called it a kimono, but I knew real kimonos were longer. This hog here, I began, excuse me, I mean Veteran Alders, had an accident with his baton, sir. I was trying to help him up, but he's feeling embarrassed, and... The vet had balls, I'll give him that. He lashed out at my kneecaps. One would think that with my being turned away and distracted by the sexy appearance of our Legion's high commander, he'd have caught me unawares. But part of my brain was always ready for trouble. Just go and die a few hundred times. You'll probably grow some surprising new survival instincts, too. I lurched back, but he managed to brush my kneecap. I almost buckled and fell, but I caught myself. Angry, I faced the vet. So you're not done yet? I asked him. Alders struggled to his feet and slurred at me carefully, drooling.
Nope. I'm going to shove this baton up your ass and run down the batteries.
I went into a fighting stance and so did the vet.
Stop it!
Turov shouted at us. We both hesitated and backed away a step.
Tribune, this intruder... the vet began.
I know what he's doing,
she said in a disgusted tone.
He's a serial intruder.
I'm under orders to, he continued.
That's right,
she interrupted again.
And I gave you those orders. I thank you for your service, but you're dismissed in this instance.
Alders looked at her in surprise.
Dismissed, sir?
That's right. Go have your ears checked. Dismissed!
Glaring at me, he switched off his shock rod and stalked away down the passage. You're a good sport, I called after him, but you still missed your calling. You're a born hog.
Shut up and get in here,
Turov ordered me. I did so, and she closed the door with an angry motion.
Damn you, McGill,
she said.
I told you to visit me at some point, but this is absurd. You can't barge up here to Gold Deck. We're in the middle of a military campaign.
Blinking for a moment, I caught on to what she was suggesting. I get that, and I purely understand. But as long as I'm here... Galena crossed her arms over her breasts and stared at me.
I don't think so,
she said.
Get out.
I shrugged. Okay. My information can wait until this is all over with, I suppose. Two steps. That's as far as I made it toward her door. When I tried to touch the lock and open it, a very thin arm barred my way.
What information?
She demanded. I thought you weren't interested. Her lips were pursed into a tiny rosebud of pink.
Are you seriously trying to blackmail me into a sexual encounter in exchange for vaguely hinted at information?
I would never dream of such a thing, I said, looking aghast. In truth, I hadn't been suggesting such a bargain. Often people who naturally entertained devious motives of their own imagined I operated the same way. All I'd been doing was trying to tease her into letting me stay in her office for more than 90 seconds. Galena heaved a sigh, which made her kimono stretch open a little. All this talk of sex had my mind and eyes wandering. Turov noticed, and she slapped me a good one.
Get your mind up here, she said, pointing to her face.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Now, tell me your information. I will judge its worth.
She laughed.
Did you seriously think I would offer you favors for whatever shopping list you have to show me?
No, sir. But I do think you're interested in busting open Winslade's harassment case. Her eyes revealed her true thoughts then for a second. They lit up like a kid's who just found the golden egg on an Easter hunt. Quickly, she buried that. But I'd seen it, and I knew I had points to spend with her. Lots of them.
Should I stay or should I go?
I asked her. It's your call. Galena made a flicking motion toward her couch. I headed to her bar first. She had a limited selection, but the booze was top-notch. I selected a Kentucky bourbon and poured us each a double. She sighed, took the glass I offered her, and sipped it.
All right,
she said.
Talk.
Well, it all started. Galena lifted her hand to stop me again.
Wait a second. Aren't you supposed to be on the front line with your unit down on the complex?
That's right.
This could be construed as desertion of your post, she said sternly. I should have you flogged.
I shrugged disinterestedly. It wouldn't be the first time. She sipped her drink, studying me like a cat watching a tiny creature it wanted to murder.
All right,
she said at last.
Since you're here, bothering me, you might as well talk.
I have something to show you, something small and probably illegal. I took her hand, and she squawked a little, but then I showed her the tiny vial in my other hand.
Let go of my hand. This is assault, McGill.
Trust me for 1 second more. Staring into my eyes, she stopped struggling. I poured the bug-like mini-drone into her fine white palm.
Gah!
She said, tugging again.
An insect? Don't move,
I said quickly. She froze in alarm.
Will it bite? Are you trying to poison me with this?
No, no, I laughed, still cupping her small hand in my larger one.
It's a drone, see?
A spy drone. It's probably filming you right now.
A spy?
Galena leaned forward, peering closely at it.
This disgusting thing is artificial, she declared.
That's right.
What am I supposed to do with it?
Well, how about you look into its eyes and say, "Hello, Winslade." That was when she finally got it. Everything flashed into her mind at once, and her soft, pretty face twisted up with emotions. First, I detected amazement. Then, her features swiftly transformed into rage. Lastly, a cold, calculating expression won out as she realized what I'd brought to her and why.
"Put it back in its tube," she said, "gently."
I did so, taking my time to nudge it back into its home. Then I handed the tube over to her. She lifted it up and threw her drink down her throat. She stared at the black, crawling thing inside the tube. Her face was full of malice.
"James,"
she said softly.
"You did well. You're hereby forgiven for smiling when I was demoted. After this disastrous campaign is over, I'll see that you get your rank back.
Okay, I said. What are you going to do to Winslade?
I'm going to peel off his balls and boil them in hot oil, separately.
That made me frown a little. After all, I didn't think Winslade deserved more abuse. Sure, he was a first-class weasel, but he'd helped me get up here to Gold Deck in good faith. He'd already been demoted, and I couldn't honestly say he should be treated to anything worse. But now wasn't the time to worry about Winslade.
Galena, I asked gently, would you like a refill?
She smiled, still looking at the captive drone in her hand. She handed over her glass, and I poured a healthy dose into it, a triple if I had to guess. I sat beside her, and my hand wandered to her bare knee. Reflexively, she put her hand on top of mine, and I froze. Then she sucked in a deep breath, downed her whiskey, and she lifted her hand again.
"You've earned it," she said. "And so have I."
With that, she let me touch her. Soon I was able to verify, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that she wasn't wearing anything else under that soft, white kimono of hers. Chapter 25. I ended up spending hours with Galena Turov. We hadn't been together like this for years. It was kind of strange, a little like going home again. Along about midnight, I finally remembered why I'd come up to Gold Deck in the first place. Galena was preening, getting ready for bed, to sleep, that is. She hadn't yet thrown me out. Normally, she always did that after she grew tired of my attentions. "Tribune?" I asked while she applied countless lotions and brushes in the bathroom.
"What is it, James?"
she asked. "When are you calling for reinforcements?" She didn't answer right away. Instead, she came to the door of the bathroom and gave me a weird look.
"Who said I was doing that?"
"No one in particular," I lied. "Everyone's just assuming."
"Well, they're assuming incorrectly. Legion Varus has a mission to perform. We don't run from battle and call home for help the moment we reach stiff resistance."
"Uh-huh. I guess that makes sense. We can wait until the Volbites push us right off the platform. That would make it look like a legit need to Central." Again, there was a pause before she responded. I knew I was pissing her off something terrible. It was only a matter of time until she went off like a firecracker. However, when she came out of the bathroom and sat on the edge of her bed, opposite me on the couch, she wasn't raging. She looked thoughtful. Her eyes were slits, staring at the aqua carpeting which she'd installed before leaving Earth. She was thinking hard.
"Graves has talked to you, hasn't he?"
she asked at last. What, Graves? No, sir. All he's done is assign our posts and send warnings when the Volbites attack in their thousands. I probably should get back to my unit, actually. They'll soon invade the complex, and I wouldn't want to miss it." Her eyes came up to meet mine.
"You really think the Rigelians will send reinforcements out here?"
"Of course," I said. "It's a vital industrial center. That's why they beat us here to capture it. They know the score. By now, their garrison commanders have reported our attack back to their homeworld. It's only a matter of time until their real force arrives." Galena flopped back on her bed. It was an inviting pose, but I didn't molest her. I let her stew, considering reality.
"I'll never get my rank back," she said. "This was a setup from the beginning. He promised glory, but he gave me a hopeless task. Drusus..."
"Now hold on," I said. "He didn't know there would be an extra million centipede troops out here. I think he honestly hoped the place would be deserted. It's not your fault the plan didn't work out. The flaw was strategic, not operational. She licked her lips while lying on her back, staring at the ceiling.
"You are naive," she said.